I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Unrivaled Players Club with Scott Mitchell, Alex Carey, and BYU's Jaren Hall.
All right, folks, welcome back. It is the Unrivaled Players Club brought to you by UCCU. Love where you bank. We're here with Jaren Hall, the quarterback at BYU. Coach A-Rod had his press conference. He was talking about the game, and you guys had a plan going into the game, and they... Arizona kind of had a different take on things.
They showed up
completely different. And so you kind of had this plan, but you had to adjust.
Yeah.
And like how much time does that take to do that adjust? Was it like a couple of series? Was it into halftime? And what kind of goes on the sideline with, you know, figuring out how things are different?
You know, it's interesting. I think the first couple of series they brought out what we expected. We didn't execute to our best of our ability, and then when we started to execute those three drives in a row, that was actually when they started to do some of that different stuff. So really, we attacked it really well, and then after that, the safety and other things came, and it was tough sledding. But I felt like we reacted fairly quickly. You know, as players on the field, we saw it before we even talked to the coaches. You know, coming off the sideline talking about it, and then talking to A-Rod up top. So we the scheme that we had, it's so well balanced for all the different defenses you might see that, we still felt prepared even when we knew they were switching it up.
Let's go to probably one of the more difficult parts of the game. Being in the stands, when somebody gets injured, it's one thing. When it's an injury like the one that Keenan Ellis suffered, where it was, you always watch the players' reactions when they are freaking out and trying to get the training staff out. It's bad, and it felt that way. That the atmosphere changed in that building. Certainly, give us an idea on the sidelines. What was going on as a team? I saw you go over there multiple times, and I know that so many of the leaders of the team were going. It was hard to keep the players kind of away totally while the personnel were working on them. We saw prayers. We saw all sorts of things. What was said that got you guys to be able to reset, because then you have to play a game after that?
Right. We didn't really have a big group gather up after it happened. I think and I didn't even see it happen, but once some of the other team leaders on the defense called everyone up for a team prayer, that's when I knew it was kind of serious. And then seeing them laying on the ground, then bringing the stretcher over, we was just kind of conversations amongst all of us, in small groups to each other, trying to stay quiet and still watching Keenan to make sure he was okay. But really, I think it was just an overall understanding that, we still got to go play, and now we got to do it for him especially. It's tough when you see your brother go down, and especially something as scary as what happened to him. Thank goodness he's okay now and on his way back.
Yeah, that's the update for a lot of people who didn't hear. I mean, it was the thing that everybody was wondering. He went to the trauma center, feelings in all of his extremities, was walking, did not have neck and back pain like everybody thought was going to be the case. I mean, honestly, miraculous is
absolutely
the only way I could really kind of explain it. You see that end so many different ways. So, let's shift gears to Utah. How do you guys shift gears to Utah? Because how much time is spent watching that film? Do you do it once or twice from the Arizona game and then just go immediately to Utah film? I mean, are you guys just watching film from that Weber State game? How does it work prepping for Utah?
Yeah, so I mean, we broke down the Arizona film on Monday right away, first part of meetings, and then as soon as it was over, we got through it quick and got right on to Utah. You know, but you know, Utah's defense is, you know, they're very firm in what they do, and they've done it for years now. We've seen the same defense for, you know, every year that I've been here at least. So, you know, we have a good idea of what to expect, but we still watch film. We watch the Weber game, and then we'll continue to watch games from last season, the season before, and really anything we can get our hands on from the past. You know, because the defensive coordinator and the coordinator before are so sound and so similar. So we got a lot of stuff to pull from.
So clearly it's the rivalry week, and, you know, there's a debate over, you know, some people say, yeah, it's not, you know, it's not the same rivalry. You're not in the same conference anymore. You know, how do you feel about it? Does it get old to you? Do you, you know, what is your take on the actual Utah-BYU rivalry week?
No, I think it's just as strong as it ever was, regardless of conference or not. I think that's a tradition that's at both Utah and at BYU with us. And so I think, you know, we'll be fired up and ready to go, but it's every kid's dream. You know, and me growing up, you know, here in Provo, I've known about the rivalry. My dad played in it, got to watch my brother play in it, now myself. So for me, you know, being from here, it means a little something extra for sure. But I think all guys that come here to BYU, they understand and they buy into it. So I expect us to be focused and just excited for the game, you know, to be fun.
It's going to be a special night, too. Obviously, the 20th anniversary of 9/11, there's going to be some commemorative stuff going on, too. Explain, I mean, you already had 55,000 people last week you guys got to play in front of, which must have been insane because 52,000 of them, I think, were BYU fans. And I guess getting the crowd back into it, getting everybody back to Lavelle Edwards Stadium with those circumstances of honoring those on 9/11 and being the rivalry game, just must be an amazing week to get ready for.
Absolutely. Very emotional. A lot of things going into it, from honoring those, you know, who protect this country and the tragedy that took place years ago to, you know, the rivalry. So I think it'll be a lot of ups and downs in that stadium, a lot of tired people afterwards. But, you know, hopefully it'll be a good night for Cougar Nation. And, you know, it'll be a fun atmosphere, like you said. We're excited and ready to go for it.
So you look through the film and you saw what, you know, the improvements are. What is the one takeaway for you? What is the one thing that you really want to improve on and build upon from week one into week two?
Starting out a lot faster, you know, not taking the time to fill out. You know, we weren't filling it out, but, you know, watching the film, it almost felt like that. But, you know, finding quicker connections with our receivers and being on the same page. And I think that'll come, you know, in game two and game three as we get better. But definitely starting out quick, you know, putting points on the board, that's what we're out there to do. So if we can get the momentum rolling early, I think it, you know, definitely will play out in our favor. And so that's kind of our focus and, you know, just executing through four quarters.
Neil Pau had the 100 plus yards. He had the vast majority of the work that you were dishing out there and a touchdown to boot. So what is it that he changed, I guess? Because everybody, it's not necessarily changed, but how is it that he got so much better in the offseason and has become such a threat there? I saw Cody Hoffman tweet out, that's what it said, number two. It's in the blood of the number twos on the team. So, yeah. Like, what is it that he did that was so different that it was head and shoulders? He became, like, kind of WR1 overnight.
Right. You know, I think honestly from last year, I think he didn't get drowned out by Dax and, you know, a lot of his success, but – you know, the ball was shared evenly between the two of them and with Gunner. So a lot of people didn't realize, you know, how special of a player Neil was last year. And he did the same thing Saturday night that he did last year, you know. But coming into this game, you know, Gunner gets hurt and some of our new guys come in. So we turned to Neil, you know, in that leadership position. And he just went out and did his thing. You know, like you said, he got much better this offseason. You know, even though he was great last year, he put in a lot of time. And he always had young guys, young receivers and tight ends with him. And so he was able to teach them, and in the process over the summer just got better. You know, he knows the game and he sees it well. And amongst that, and dude's just a physical freak and just plays the position so smooth.
A lot of talk the end of last weekend and into this week about BYU could potentially be invited to the Big 12. Does that have any impact on you? Do you think much about that? And could it possibly have a significant impact on the Utah-BYU rivalry?
You know, to that last question, if that were to happen, which I don't know anything about that, honestly, you know, we haven't talked about it much at all. We're just focused on this season. So I'm sorry I don't have any information on the Big 12 more deal going on. But as far as the rivalry with Utah, I don't imagine it changing at all. You know, that's something that's, you know, 40 minutes down the road from each other. There's a long history of tight games and fun games in the history of college football. So I think that'll forever be at the heart of both Utah and BYU's programs.
Not a lot of work from the tight ends this week, who are is a group that is like one of the best in the country, I think, in terms of units.
Yeah.
It took one play for Mason Wake to hurdle somebody, which is the only reason my son went to Las Vegas. So it was payoff big time.
Him and everybody else.
Yeah, so my thing is like, is that part of the scheme going forward? You're like, hey, we got to figure out. Or were they scheming to make sure that Isaac Rex and Dallin Holker were not running across the middle, drag routes, easy targets all night?
Yeah, no, to their credit, like you said, they did a lot of different things that affected, you know, the tight end, the pass game, and some other things. But at the same time, you know, I think we just used them in a way that we felt was good, you know, as the game went on. We got them involved in the pass game at certain times, and, you know, but they're some of the best blockers we have on the team, too. So we felt like the run was working and we had some momentum. You know, that's where they're used. So, you know, those guys are studs. They do everything, man. They know the playbook as receivers, as the linemen, and as tight ends. So they got the hardest job on the field next to being the quarterback. And so we'll definitely keep them involved. And I think as the season progresses and we get our groove, you know, just like last season, you'll see a lot of good come from those guys.
BYU, Utah. It's the week. It is the rivalry week. So many things going on. So many things of service you can participate in your community. And so we appreciate all of you guys who are out there doing something good this week, and not just in the name of the rivalry, but also because of our community. Jaren Hall, BYU quarterback, part of the Players Club every week right here on KSL News Radio. Jaren, have a good week. Stay healthy. And we'll see you on Saturday, man. Thanks for hanging out with us again.
Thank you, guys. See you Saturday.
All right, we'll be right back. More to go right here after news, traffic, and weather. We've got some more of this week's press conferences to play. You can hear more of our conversation with Jaren Hall as well. And, look, interesting stuff to break down. So we'll do it right after the break. Stay right here with us on KSL News Radio.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.